I wonder, have you ever had to hang on for dear life? Hanging on to things is really difficult. My brother and his wife are really keen rock climbers. When we go to see them, he insists on taking us to the local climbing club. Now, I can just about manage to scrabble up if there are really big handholds, but I do look a little bit like a cow who thinks he's Spider-Man. My brother, on the other hand, has the speed of a ferret and the stamina of an ox. He can cling to walls like a limpet. I'm not just talking about a really steep surface. He clings to the tiniest cranny by his fingertips. And he does it upside down, which I think is pretty impressive. And it's that hanging on that Luke wants us to do with the words of Jesus. Luke wants us to hang on, to stick on, to superglue ourselves to the words of Jesus, because he can set people free. To superglue ourselves to the words of Jesus, because he can set people free. At the beginning of his gospel, Luke said he's writing his book to give us confidence in the message of Jesus. Last week, Jesus said that as we hear his words scattered like seed, he wants us to be good soil, to hear his words, to cling on to them, to keep going with them. And in chapter 9, after our passage, Jesus is going to send his disciples out to take his word to other people. And in between Jesus' teaching in chapter 8, that we should listen to his word, and his sending out his disciples in chapter 9 to take his word out, in between we have these four miracles that give us confidence in the person who speaks these words. And the first two of those miracles we're looking at this week. So as we become more confident in the person of Jesus, we'll become more confident in the words of Jesus. Luke wants us to superglue ourselves to the words of Jesus, and particularly this week, it's because he can set people free. Let's start by seeing how Luke raises the stakes, and this is our first point, that Jesus' words have power because he has power. Jesus' words have power because he has power. Take a look at the first of our stories. Jesus and the disciples are travelling across the Sea of Galilee, and a huge storm breaks out, so huge that the disciples, who are mostly fishermen by trade, are scared for their lives. They wake Jesus up and say, in verse 24, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." So Jesus stands up, he speaks, and the storm dies down. The point is that Jesus' words have power because he has power. The disciples say as much in verse 25. They say, "He commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him." This guy's words have authority because he has authority. And that's why the disciples are confused. Jesus asks them, if you see, "Where is your faith?" And their response is to say, "Who is this?" Jesus' own disciples, his best mates, don't know who he is. But, I wonder if you noticed, the legion of demons does. In verse 28, they say, "Jesus, Son of the Most High God." Who is this who commands even the winds and the water and they obey him? Jesus, Son of the Most High God. When Alan Hansen says Chelsea need to buy a new striker for this summer, it's an opinion. Alan Hansen isn't in charge of Chelsea. His words can't make anything happen. But when Jose Mourinho and the Chelsea board says, "We will buy a new striker this summer," it happens. For those of you who aren't football fans, I apologise. Yeah, that's Tim. Jesus' words have power because he has power. Remember, Luke's big aim is to get us to superglue ourselves to the words of Jesus. So if Jesus' words have power, what kind of power does he have? And how will that encourage us to stick to his words? Well, that's our second point. Because of his power, Jesus can set people free so we can join his family. Jesus can set people free so we can join his family. This freedom Jesus brings is illustrated by the lunatic in verse 27. "For a long time this man had not worn clothes or lived in a house, but had lived in the tombs." You may have heard of Stephen Gough, I don't know if you know who he is. The Naked Rambler is his title. He claims that, and I quote, "The freedom to go naked in public is a basic human right." Now, we don't even need to discuss what's wrong with that. But this guy here is not standing up for principle. He's not some, ex-army anarchist who wants to change the way society works. He is subhuman and sub-alive. That's what this guy is. He was even beyond help. Verse 29. Many times the demon had seized him, and though he was chained hand and foot and kept under guard, he had broken his chains and had been driven by the demon into solitary places. The top psychiatrists of the day can't help this guy. He's been sectioned and it failed. He's like some first century Houdini or some supernatural David Blaine. He can't be locked up. Chains are broken, guards are thwarted, as this man runs crazily into the desert to be alone. Why was he doing that? Well, verse 30 tells us it was because he was possessed by a legion of demons. Practically a whole army of crack, satanic SAS troops. Has this guy's mind in their power? And the pigs show us how the presence of the demons leads to death. In verse 32 is a tidal wave of sausage meat. As the pigs fling themselves madly into the sea to their own death. And what a terrible disaster for the area that must be as well. Think how mad cow disease destroyed British farming. Think how Bernard Matthews' profits hit rock bottom. Why? They can't sell any turkeys. What a disaster for the area. No pig equals no pork equals no job. People ask, why did Jesus let this happen? Well, Jesus wants to show us the consequences of what happens when evil is allowed to reign free. It's good to remember the sheer horror of unrestrained evil. The next time I let myself go and just allow a little bit of bitterness or about that person, or a relaxed bit of gossip, you know, or that tiny act of selfishness, which I'm allowed myself today, you know, because sin, you know, is a grey area and I'm a grown up, I can do what I want. When evil has free rein, look what it does. A man's life ruined, a community destroyed. And if that's what evil is like when it's allowed to do what it wants, I want nothing to do with it whatsoever. Not even a little bit. It's the same reason that I'd never take heroin, for example. When I see what that's done to people I've met, you know, you see someone who's let heroin have free rein over their life. They've got a collapsed life, constantly tired, probably living on the streets, can't hold down a job. I'd never want to even touch the stuff. I mean, that's what we say to our kids, isn't it? We say, don't touch drugs, look what it can do to you, so don't even touch them. Why would we be any less careful with sin and evil? Why would that be any safer to play around with? But the great news is that Jesus sets this man free. And what Jesus does here is a picture and a guarantee of what he will do for every Christian. Setting this man free from demonic evil is a picture of how he'll set all Christians free from sin, the world, and the devil. We know that because of what the demons call him in verse 28. They say, Jesus, Son of the Most High God. Now, Jesus is not the only person to be called the Son of God in this book. See, there are two families in this story. The family of the first Son of God, the failed Son of God, and the family of the second Son of God, the true Son of God. The first Son of God is at the very end of chapter 3, if you want to turn back there. It stretches back thousands of years as we look at Jesus' family tree, all the way back to, in verse 38, the son of Enosh, the son of Seth, the son of Adam, the Son of God. Adam, the Son of God, is an important guy. He represented the entire human race. You, your mother, your brother, your dentist, he represented them. And Adam was tempted and failed. And Adam's failure is the reason for all the problems that you, your mother, your brother, and your dentist face in life. Adam caved into Satan's temptation, which led to sin and to evil and to suffering and to death. This is why people have problems in life, because the first son of Adam caved into temptation. Now the whole world is dangerously bound and tied to sin and to evil and to suffering and to death. All because the first son of God caved into temptation. We're all born into the family of the first son of God. We're all born into sin, into evil, into suffering, into death. You, your mother, your brother, and your dentist. That is the family we're all born into. Even this crazy demon-possessed guy, that's the family that he was born into. But the second son of God never caved into sin. Chapter 4, verse 2 says this. He was tempted by the devil. 40 days he was tempted by the devil. And three times he's tempted, and three times he doesn't cave in. And because he never caved into sin, Luke tells us that he can set us free, unbind us, untie us from sin, from evil, from suffering, and from death. Chapter 4, verse 18, over the page, says this of Jesus. The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour. So there are two families in this story. The family of the failed Son of God and the family of the true Son of God. And Jesus says that we can leave the first family, the failed family, and join the second family, the true family. Turn back to chapter 8 if you're not there already, if you would. And in verse 21, Jesus says this of his family. He replied, "My mother and my brothers are those who hear God's word and put it into practice." All of us, me, you, your mother, your brother, your dentist, are born as members of the failed family. Born trapped by sin, trapped by evil, trapped by death. And this guy in our story is just an extreme case. He is an extreme case, but he's just an extreme case of that. If Jesus can set this guy free to join his family, then we can be confident that Jesus can set anyone free to join his family. And that's why the demons quake when they realize who he is. That's why they say, "I beg you, don't torture me." They know that he's come for them. They're the very guys that he's come to overthrow. And they beg him and beg him and beg him. Verse 31, "Please don't send us into the abyss." Jesus is completely in control of what is going on. He's come to set people free so that they can join his family. Jesus is for anyone. There's no one who can't join Jesus' family. And through his word. And the greatest, the most loving thing we can do is to share Jesus' word with people who are still stuck in the old family. We can have real confidence in the word of Jesus. Jesus really can set me free to be in his family. And one day, Jesus will bring me all the way to total, complete, and utter freedom from all sin, from every evil, and from death forever in his new world. Jesus can set us free so we can join his family. Jesus can set us free, but do I want to be in his family? Luke leaves us with a question. Do we want to be in his family? Or to put it another way, do we want to be with Jesus? That's our final point. Do you want to be with Jesus? You may have noticed that there are three prayers in this miracle story. The first people to pray are the demons. They pray in verse 28 and verse 31. And each time they beg Jesus, and they beg him not to hurt them. Jesus has power over evil, and there's no enemy we can face that's not under his control ultimately. He has power and authority over evil, so we can trust him in the face of whatever the world can throw at us. The second prayer is the prayer of the people in verse 35. Why don't I read that? "When they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone out sitting at Jesus' feet, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid." Now, I can't imagine a better thing for this local town. Jesus didn't just set up a youth group or an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting or a bridge club for those who are lonely. He cast out a demon from their midst, you know? I mean, talk about doing them a favour. I mean, just imagine, you can't let the kids out during the day. There's this crazy guy. You're not even safe in your own house. This guy can break through chains. It was dangerous having him around, and Jesus gets rid of the problem. And how did they respond? They were afraid. In fact, they're so afraid that in the next verse they ask him to leave. That's their prayer. I mean, this isn't like, you know, can you pull your troops out of Iraq, please? However we feel about that. It's more like, winning lottery ticket, you say, get it away from me. Why would you do that? It's completely crazy to ask for such a good thing like that to be, you know, taken away from you. They're afraid because of his power. Power that he's demonstrated he has. And with power comes authority. That's what they're scared of. So they ask him to go away and they get exactly what they pray for. It's tragic, but it happens all the time. I have a friend who works in a theatre, and she comes across people that I studied with when I was at drama school. And she uses me as an excuse to talk about Jesus. You know, Pete, he's working for a church now, all that stuff. But all of them have a line. All of them have a line, apparently, that they use with her. She says it's really strange. They start off with a perfectly reasonable conversation, but the moment they feel Jesus get under their skin, their reaction is, I just don't want to talk about this anymore. And they say that, I just don't want to talk about this anymore. We'll experience this personally, I imagine. I certainly do. We'll fear talking about Jesus in a particular area of our lives. That can be why people fall away after years and years. They kept this one area to themselves, but eventually had to bite the bullet and just wanted Jesus to go away. I mean, I'm 24 and I've seen that happen to people already. So I imagine it must happen to people as they continue further on. We'll experience this in our relationships. We're told not to talk about religion at work. We just don't want to know. Just keep Jesus out of the office. Maybe our friends become cold and distant when we try and talk about our faith or church. Those are the first two prayers. The demons and the people. They both get what they want. And they want Jesus to go away so they can do what they want without him. But the third prayer is the prayer of the man. Now, this is the new Christian, and all he wants is to be with Jesus. Verse 38. The man from whom the demons had gone begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him away. Jesus has the power to still a storm. Jesus has authority to command the forces of Satan, and that scares some. But when you get to know him, Jesus is the kind of guy that you just want to be around. This new member of the family, he wants to be with Jesus. Jesus has loved him, Jesus has set him free, and that is attractive. Jesus Christ loves us. He loves you, and he loves me. He wants you to grow in that freedom in his family. And we can be and will be with him forever, if we're members of his family now. So of the three prayers, why is this the only person who doesn't get what he wants? He's the only one actually in Jesus' family. So why doesn't he get what he asks for? Well, firstly, he has now. This might sound a bit crass, but this man is now dead, so he's with Jesus. So he did get what he prayed for eventually, just in God's timing and not in his. But secondly, think about it for a moment. Jesus is about to set out on his way to Jerusalem. That's what he says in chapter 9. He's going to set his face to go towards Jerusalem, where he knows he's going to die for sins, which is what gives him the right to set people free like this. So Jesus isn't going to be around physically for much longer. And if this guy wants to be with Jesus, Jesus knows the best thing for him is to speak his words and to cling on to them. In a letter to one of his friends, Paul the Apostle said this: I pray that you may be active in sharing your faith so that you will have a full understanding of every good thing we have in Christ. Do you want to be with Jesus? Jesus whose words have power because he has power. Jesus who sets people free to join his family. Do you want to be with this Jesus? One day we'll be with him physically for eternity, and that will be great. But until then, let's superglue ourselves to his words, because he sets people free.